You love her?
Yes, we were high school sweethearts. What kind of question is that?
If you go out after the vampire, you may never see her again. If you've never hunted one out there at night in its own territory, you don't know what we're up against, and nothing I can tell you will prepare you for it. But think about never seeing Beth again. Never holding her hand. Never hearing her voice. We can go out in the morning. The vampire may not move its coffin tonight, or it might move from the cave to the homestead or vice versa. We might catch it tomorrow without risking anybody's life.
Do you think it won't move tonight?
I took a deep breath and wanted to lie. God knows I wanted to lie. No, I think it'll leave the immediate area tonight. That's probably why he came just after full dark. It gives him all night to run.
Then we go after him.
I nodded. Okay, but we have to have some ground rules here. I'm in charge. I've done this before, and I'm still alive. That makes me an expert. If you do everything I say, maybe, just maybe, we can all live until morning.
Except for the vampire, St. John said.
Yeah, sure. It had been a long time since I had gone up against a vampire at night in the open. My vampire kit was at home in my closet. It was illegal to carry it with me without a specific court order of execution. I had the cross I was wearing, the two handguns, the two knives, and that was it. No holy water, no extra crosses, no shotgun. Hell, no stake and mallet.
Do you have silver bullets?
I can get some. Do it. And find me a shotgun and silver ammo for that, too. Is there a Catholic or Episcopalian church around here?
Of course, he said.
We need some holy water and holy wafer, the host.
I know you can throw the holy water on the vampire, but I didn't know you could throw the host.
I had to smile. They aren't like little holy grenades. I want the host to give to the Quinlan so they can put one at every windowsill, every doorsill.
You think it'll come for them?
No, but the girl invited it in. Only she can revoke the invitation, and she's dead. Until we get the bastard, better safe than sorry. He hesitated, then nodded. I'll go to the church. I'll see what I can do. He went for the door.
And Sheriff?
He stopped and turned to me. I want that court order in my hands before we leave. I'm not going to be up on murder charges. He nodded sort of nervously, head bobbing like one of those dogs you see in the backs of cars.
You'll have it, Miss Blake.
He left, closing the door behind him. I was left alone with the dead girl. She lay there, pale and unmoving, growing colder, deader. If her parents had their way, it would be permanent. And it would be my job to make it happen. There were school books scattered beside the bed, as if she had been studying in bed before he came. I pushed one of the book covers closed with my toe, careful not to rearrange it. Calculus. She'd been studying calculus before she put on her makeup and black teddy. Shit.
Chapter 12.
While we waited for the court order, I talked to the family. Not my favorite thing to do, but necessary. This hadn't been a random attack, which meant they probably knew the vampire, or had known him before he died. The living room continued the pastel theme, blue predominating. Beth St. John had made coffee. She'd shanghaied Larry into carrying up a tray. I guess she didn't want to see the body again. Couldn't say I blamed her. I'd seen bloodier murder scenes, a lot bloodier. But each death has its own peculiar poignancy. There was something very piteous about Ellie Quinlan stretched across her pink candy sheets, and I hadn't known her. Beth St. John had. Made it hard. The family sat huddled on the white sofa. The man was broad, not fat, but square like a linebacker. He had short black hair that was going nicely gray at the sideburns, very distinguished. His complexion was ruddy, not tanned, but colorful just the same. He was dressed in a white dress shirt unbuttoned at the neck, but sleeves still sporting their cufflinks. His face was very tight, immobile like a mask, as if underneath something entirely different was going on. He looked calm, composed, but the effort thrummed along his skin. Anger glittered in his dark eyes. His arm was around his wife's shoulders. She leaned into him, crying softly, eyes closed as if that would make it better. Her eye makeup had smeared in long, multicolored streaks like an oil slick down her cheeks. She had thick black hair done in some short, complicated style that looked too stiff to touch. She wore a long-sleeved button-down blouse with a delicate flower pattern on it, pink predominating. Her slacks were a matching pink. Her feet were bare except for dark hose. A delicate gold cross and wedding rings were her only jewelry. The boy was only about my height and slender as a willow. He hadn't hit his growth spurt yet, and it made him look younger than he was. His face had that soft, perfect skin that said he'd never had a pimple and shaving was a distant dream. If the girl was 17, he had to be at least 15, maybe 16. He could have passed for 12. A perfect victim, except for his eyes and the way he held himself. Even in the midst of grief with the lines of tears drying on his face, he looked sure of himself, self-possessed. His eyes held a quick intelligence and a rage that would hold the bullies at bay. His hair was the perfect black of his father's, but it was baby fine, probably the natural texture of Mrs. Quinlan's before she styled it to death. A little black poodle was in his lap. It had barked like a machine gun, rat-a-tat-tat, yip-yip-yip, until he'd picked it up and held it. A soft growl tickled out of its curly jaws.
"Hush, Raven," the boy said.
He petted the dog as he said it, thus rewarding the growling. The dog growled again. He petted it again. I decided to ignore it. If the poodle got loose, I figured I could take it. I was armed.
"Mr. and Mrs. Quinlan, my name's Anita Blake. I need to ask you a few questions."
"Have you staked the body yet?"
the man asked. "No, Mr. Quinlan. The sheriff and I agreed to wait 24 hours.
"Her immortal soul is in jeopardy. We want it done now."
"If you still want it done tomorrow night, I'll do it."
"We want it done now."
He was holding his wife very tight, fingers digging into her shoulder. She opened her eyes and blinked at him.
"Jeffrey, please. You're hurting me."
He swallowed hard and loosened his grip.
"I'm sorry, Sally. I'm sorry."
The apology seemed to take some of the anger out of him. The lines in his face softened. He shook his head.
"We must save her soul. Her life is gone, but her soul remains. We must save that at least."
There had been a time when I believed that too. Down to my toes, I thought all vampires were evil. Now, I wasn't so sure. I knew too many of them who didn't seem that bad. I knew evil when I felt it, and that wasn't what they were. I didn't know what they were, but were they damned? According to the Catholic Church, yes, they were, and so was the girl upstairs. But then, according to the Church, so was I. I'd become Episcopalian when the Church declared all animators excommunicates.
"Are you Catholic, Mr. Quinlan?"
"Yes. What difference does that make?"
"I was raised Catholic, so I understand your beliefs."
"They are not beliefs, Miss, what is your name?"
"Blake. Anita Blake."
"They are not beliefs, Miss Blake. They are facts. Ellie's immortal soul is in danger of eternal damnation. We must help her."
"Do you understand what you're asking me to do?" I asked.
"To save her."
I shook my head. Mrs. Quinlan was looking at me. Her eyes were very intent. I was betting I could cause a little family disagreement.
"I will put a stake through her heart and chop off her head."
I left the fact out that most of my executions were done with a shotgun now at close range. It was messy, and you needed a closed coffin, but it was a lot easier on me and a quicker death for the vampire. Mrs. Quinlan started to cry again, huddling against her husband. She buried her face against him, smearing makeup on his clean white shirt.
"Are you trying to upset my wife?"
"No, sir, but I want you all to realize that 2 nights from now, Ellie will rise as a vampire. She'll walk and talk. Eventually, she'll be able to be around you. If I stake her, all she'll be is dead."
"She is already dead. We want you to do your job," he said.
Mrs. Quinlan wouldn't look at me. Either she believed as strongly as her hubby, or she wouldn't fight him. Not even for her daughter's continued existence. I let it go. I could stall for 24 hours. I doubted that Mr. Quinlan was going to change his mind. I had hopes for Mrs. Quinlan. "Does the poodle always bark at strangers?" They all three blinked at me like rabbits caught in headlights. The change of subject was too abrupt for their grief.
"What has that got to do with anything?"
he asked.
There's a murderous vampire out there somewhere. I'm going to catch him, but I need your help. So please, just answer my questions as best you can.
What does the dog have to do with it?
I sighed and sipped my coffee. He had just found his daughter dead, murdered, raped, I'm sure he'd told himself. The horror of it cut him some slack, but he was beginning to use it up. The poodle barked its head off when I came to the door. Does it bark every time a stranger comes to the house? The boy saw what I was getting at. Yeah, Raven always barks at strangers. I ignored his parents and talked to the most reasonable person in the room. What's your name? Jeff, he said. God, Jeffrey Jr., of course. How many times would I have to come to the house before Raven stopped barking at me? He thought about that, rolling his lower lip under, really thinking about it. Mrs. Quinlan sat up, a little apart from her husband. Raven always barks when someone comes to the door, even if she knows you. Did she bark tonight? The parents frowned at me. Jeff said, Yeah, she barked like crazy until Ellie let her in her room just after dark. Ellie let her in, then a few minutes later Raven came back downstairs. How'd you find the body? Raven started barking again and wouldn't stop. Ellie didn't let her in. Ellie always lets her in. I mean, I'm not allowed in her room, but Raven gets to go in even when Ellie wants her privacy. He made that last word sound like he usually said it with a lot of eye-rolling. I knocked at the door and she didn't answer. Raven was scratching at the door. It was locked. She locked her door a lot, but she wouldn't answer. A tear escaped from his wide eyes. I went and got Dad. You unlocked the door, Mr. Quinlan? He nodded.
Yes. And she was just lying there. I couldn't bear to touch her. She's unclean now.
He was choking on tears, trying so hard not to cry that his face was turning purple. Jeff came and put his arm around his dad, leaning against his mother, the poodle still gripped in his other arm. The dog whined softly, licked the makeup from Mrs. Quinlan's face. The woman looked up and gave a choked laugh, petting the curly fur. I wanted to leave. I wanted to let them huddle together and grieve. Hell, the death was so fresh they hadn't gotten to grieving yet. They were still in shock. But I couldn't leave. Sheriff St. John would be back with the warrant, and I needed as much information as I could get before we braved the darkness. Larry was sitting in the corner in a pale blue chair. He was being so quiet you'd almost forget he was there. But his eyes were eager, noticing everything, filing it all away. When I first realized he damn near memorized everything I said and did, it was intimidating. Now I counted on it. Beth St. John came into the room with a tray of sandwiches, coffee, and soft drinks. I didn't remember anybody asking for them, but I think Beth was needing something to do besides sit here and watch the Quinlans cry. Me too. She set the tray on the coffee table between the couch and the love seat. The Quinlans ignored it. I took a fresh mug of coffee. Grilling grieving families always goes down better with caffeine. The group huddle broke up. The poodle was transferred to the wife's arms, and the two men sat on either side of her. Jeffrey and Jeff looked at me with identical eyes. It was almost eerie. Genetics at work. The vampire had to be in the room with Ellie when she let the dog in at full dark, I said.
My daughter would not have let in her murderer.
If she was 18, Mr. Quinlan, it wouldn't be murder.
Being made a vampire against your will is still murder, Miss Blake.
I was getting tired of everyone calling me Miss, but the grieving father could do it a few more times. I believe your daughter knew the vampire. I believe she let him in willingly.
You are crazy. Beth, go get the sheriff. I want this woman out of my house.
Beth stood up uncertainly. David's gone to get some things, Jeffrey. Deputy Coltrane's upstairs with the body, but...
Then get him down here.
Beth looked at me, then back to him. She gripped her small hands together, almost wringing them. Jeffrey, she's a licensed vampire hunter. She's done this a lot. Listen to her. He stood up.
My daughter was raped and murdered by some soulless, blood-sucking animal, and I want this woman out of my house now.
If he hadn't been crying at the same time, I'd have been pissed. Beth looked at me. She was willing to stand up to him if I needed her to. Mucho points for her. Has anyone you know vanished or died recently? I asked. Quinlan squinted at me. He looked confused. The change of subject again was just too abrupt. I was hoping I could distract him from throwing me out long enough to learn something.
What?
Has anyone you know gone missing or died recently? He shook his head.
No.
Andy's missing, Jeff said.
Quinlan shook his head again.
That boy is no concern of ours.
Who's Andy? I asked.
Ellie's boyfriend?
He is not her boyfriend, Quinlan said.
I caught Jeff's gaze. The look said it all. Andy had been a boyfriend, and dear old Dad hadn't liked him one little bit.
Why didn't you like Andy, Mr. Quinlan?
He was a criminal.
I raised my eyebrows.
In what way?
He was arrested for drug abuse.
He smoked some pot, Jeff said.
I was beginning to wish I could just go off and talk with Jeff. He seemed to know what was going on and wasn't trying to hide it. Trick was how to manage it.
He was a corrupting influence on my daughter, and I put a stop to it.
And he's missing? I asked.
Yes, Jeff said.
I will answer Miss Blake's questions, Jeff. I am the man of the house.
Jesus, man of the house. Hadn't heard that in a while. I'd like to see the rest of the house in case the vampire entered somewhere other than her room. If Jeff could show me the doors, I'd appreciate it.
I can show you around, Miss Blake, Quinlan said.
I'm sure your wife needs you right now, Mr. Quinlan. Jeff can show me around, but only you can comfort your wife. Mrs. Quinlan looked up at him, then at me, as if she wasn't sure she wanted to be comforted.
But I knew the image would appeal to him.
He nodded.
Perhaps you're right.
He touched his wife's shoulder.
Sally needs me right now.
Sally cooperated with fresh crying, using the poodle as a sort of impromptu handkerchief. The poodle squirmed and whined. Quinlan sat down and took his wife in his arms. The dog squirmed free and trotted over to Jeff. I stood. Larry stood. I moved towards the door and looked back at the boy. Jeff stood and the poodle trotted at his side. I opened the doors and ushered us all outside. Raven the poodle eyed me suspiciously, but she came along. I caught a last glimpse of Beth St. John gazing at the door as if she wanted to go with us, but she sat down beside the unwanted sandwiches and the cooling coffee. She sat like a good soldier. She would not abandon her post. I closed the door, feeling cowardly. I was glad it wasn't my job to hold the Quinlan's hands. Facing the vampire, even in the dark, didn't seem so bad by comparison. Of course, I was still safe inside the house. Out there in the dark with the vampire, I might feel different.
Chapter 13. We stood out in the entryway. The air felt cooler out here, easier to breathe. Had to be my imagination. The poodle was sniffing at my foot. She gave a low growl and Jeff picked her up, tucking her under one arm in a familiar gesture like he'd done it 100 times before.
You don't really want to see the doors, do you? He asked.
No, I said.
Dad's all right, he's just...
He shrugged.
He's just right, and everyone else is wrong. He doesn't mean anything by it.
I know. He's scared right now, too. That makes everyone bitchy. Jeff grinned. I wasn't sure if it was the scared comment or the word bitchy. Probably didn't hear many people saying either about his dad.
How serious were Andy and your sister?
He glanced at the closed doors and lowered his voice just a little.
Dad'll say not very, but they were serious. Real serious.
He glanced at the door again.
We can go somewhere else to talk, I said. Your choice of rooms.
He looked at me.
You're really a vampire hunter?
If the circumstances had been different, he would have been enjoying himself. It's hard not to think it's cool to put stakes through people's chests.
Yeah, and we raise zombies, too. Both of you?
He sounded surprised.
I'm a full-fledged animator, Larry said.
Jeff shook his head.
We can talk in my room.
He led the way up the stairs. We followed. If I'd been a cop, questioning a juvenile without a guardian or lawyer present would have been illegal. But I wasn't a cop, and he wasn't a suspect. Just gathering information, folks. Just grilling a 16-year-old boy about his sister's sex life. Murder investigations are never pleasant, and some of that unpleasantness has nothing to do with the corpse.
Jeff hesitated at the head of the stairs, peering down the hallway. Deputy Coltrane was standing outside Ellie's room, back stiff, hands behind his back, alert for intruders. The door was open. Too hard to stand in the room with the body, I guess. He saw Jeff and closed the door, still standing in front of it. Nice of Coltrane to make sure Jeff didn't see the body. But standing outside the closed door was not the best idea. A vampire, if it was old enough, could have come in the room behind him and opened the door before he could have drawn his gun. The undead make no noise. I debated on whether to tell him that. I let it go. If the vamp had meant to take out more people, it could have. He could have taken out the entire family. Instead, when the dog barked, he panicked and ran. This was not an ancient bloodsucker. This was someone who was new at the job. I was betting on the boyfriend, Andy, but I'd keep an open mind. Andy might have just driven to California to find fame and fortune, but I doubted it. Jeff opened the door near the head of the stairs and went in. His room was smaller than his sister's. Being firstborn does have its advantages. The wallpaper was tan with cowboys and Indians on it. The bed had a matching spread. It was the room of a much younger person, just like his sister's. The walls were bare. No pin-ups, no sports figures. There was a desk stacked high with books. A small pile of clothes lay near the closet door. Raven the poodle sniffed the clothes. Jeff shooed her away and kicked the clothes into the closet and closed the door.
Sit down anywhere you can.
He pulled the desk chair out a little, then stood near the window, not sure what to do. I doubted he had many adults up to his room for a talk. Parents didn't count. Though, frankly, I couldn't imagine either of the Quinlans coming in for a quiet chat. I took the chair. I figured Jeff would feel more comfortable lounging on his bed with Larry than with me. Besides, I wasn't used to wearing skirts this short yet, and every once in a while I forgot. The chair seemed safer. Larry sat down on the bed with his back pressed against the wall. Jeff sat down next to him, propping some of the pillows into the corner for a backrest. Raven jumped up on the bed, circled his lap twice, and lay down. Cozy. How hot an item were Andy and your sister? No prelims. Off with the clothes. He glanced at both of us. Larry gave him an encouraging smile. He shifted more securely against his mound of pillows and said,
Pretty hot. I mean, they hung all over each other at school.
Embarrassing, I said.
Yeah. I mean, she was my sister. She's only a year older than me, and there's this guy pawing her.
He shook his head. He rubbed the poodle's ears, hands moving down her small, curly body. He petted her like it was habit, a comfort measure.
Did you like Andy?
He shrugged.
He was older and sort of cool, but no, I thought Ellie could have done better.
How so?
He did smoke pot and didn't have any plans for college. Andy wasn't going anywhere. It was like the fact that he loved my sister was everything. Like they'd live on love or something stupid like that.
I agreed that that was stupid.
When your dad put a stop to it, did it stop?
He grinned at me.
No. They just started sneaking around. I think if anything, telling Ellie she couldn't see him made it worse.
It usually does, I said.
When did Andy disappear? About 2 weeks ago. His car went missing too, so everybody thought he'd run off. But he wouldn't have left Ellie behind. He was sort of creepy, but he wouldn't have left her.
Was Ellie upset at being left behind? He frowned, hugging the dog against his chest. Raven licked his chin with her small pink tongue.
That was the weird part. I mean, I know she had to pretend not to care in front of Mom and Dad, but even at school or out with her friends, she didn't seem to care. I was kind of glad. I mean, Andy was a loser, but it wasn't like she didn't believe he was gone or knew something the rest of us didn't. I just thought he'd gone off to find, like, an out-of-town job and was gonna send for her.
Maybe he did, I said. The frown deepened between his smooth, unblemished brows.
What do you mean?
I think Andy may be the vampire that did your sister. A look of disgust crumbled his face even further.
I don't believe that. Andy loved Ellie. He wouldn't kill her.
If he's a vampire, Jeff, he wouldn't think turning her into the undead is killing her. He'd probably think of it as bringing her over.
Jeff shook his head.
Raven wiggled out of his grasp as if he was squeezing too hard. She hopped off his lap and lay down on the covers.
Andy wouldn't hurt Ellie. Doesn't it hurt to die?
Probably, I said.
The bushes underneath her end window are all crushed, Larry said.
I looked at him.
Say again?
He smiled, pleased with himself.
I took a look around outside. That's what took me so long when you sent me out for gloves that you didn't need. The bushes under the end window to the girl's room are all smashed, like something heavy fell on them.
I had a moment to visualize Larry out in the dark, all alone, unarmed except for his cross. The thought made my skin cold. I opened my mouth to yell at him and closed it. Never dress anyone down in public unless it's an object lesson. I said,
Any tracks?
I gave myself a dozen brownie points for not yelling.
Do I look like Tonto? Besides, the ground is just grass and it's been so dry lately. I don't think there'd be any tracks.
He frowned at me.
Can you track vampires?
Not normally, but if this one is as new as I think he is, then maybe. I nodded.
Yeah.
I stood up. I've got to go ask the deputy something. Thank you for your help, Jeff. I offered him my hand to shake. He took it. His handshake was a little uncertain, as if he wasn't used to it. I went for the door, and Larry followed.
You will find him and kill him, even if it's Andy?
Jeff asked. I turned back and looked at him. His dark eyes were still intelligent, still full of purpose, but there was also a little boy needing reassurance.
Yeah, we'll find him. And kill him?
And kill him, I said.
Good,
he said.
Good.
I wasn't sure if good was the word I would have chosen, but it wasn't my sister lying dead in the other room.
You got a cross? I asked.
He frowned, but said,
Yeah.
You wearing it?
He shook his head.
Get it and wear it until we catch him, okay?
You think he'll come back?
Fear glittered at the edge of his eyes.
No, but you never know, Jeff. Just humor me.
He got up and went to his bureau. There was a line of glittering chain on one corner of the mirror. When he picked it up, a tiny gold cross dangled from it. I watched him put it on. The dog watched it all with anxious eyes. I smiled.
We'll see you later.
He nodded, fingering the cross, scared now underneath the shock. We left him in the tender care of Raven.
You really think the vamp will come back to the house? Larry asked.
No, I said. But just in case your little visit out into the dark gives him ideas, I want Jeff to at least have a cross on.
Heh, he said. I found a clue.
Deputy Coltrane was watching us, but we were running out of privacy. I kept my voice down and hoped that was enough.
Yeah, and you went out, alone, unarmed, in the dark, with a vampire that had already killed once on the loose. You said it was a really new vampire, not before you went out after the gloves. Maybe I figured out that it was a new one all on my own, he said.
He was looking stubborn. Like, far from taking my warning to heart, he might just do it again.
New vampires can still kill you, Larry. With a cross on?
He had a point. Very few of the new dead could get past the pain of a cross, or play enough head games to get you to take it off voluntarily.
Fine, Larry, but where's the vampire that made him? That one may be a couple of centuries old, and it's out in the dark, too.
He went a little pale around the edges.
I never thought of that.
I did.
He gave a shrug and had the grace to look embarrassed. That's why you're the boss.
That's right, I said.
All right, all right. I promise to be good.
Great. Now let's go ask Deputy Coltrane if he knows anyone who could track our vampire.
Can you really track a vampire like that?
I don't know. But with one less than 2 weeks old, one that falls out of a window and into some shrubs, you might be able to. They at least might be able to narrow down where we should look first. He was grinning very broadly at me.
Yeah, knowing it fell out the window is useful information. It might not have occurred to me to check for tracks outside the window.
If he grinned any wider, he was going to pull something.
And if a vampire old enough to get past your cross had eaten your face, I'd never have known about the shrubs.
Ah, Anita, I done good. I shook my head. For all that Larry had seen of vampires, it wasn't enough. He still didn't fully appreciate what they were. He didn't have any scars yet. If he stayed in the business long enough to get his license, that would change. God help him.
Chapter 14. The wind was cool and smelled of rain. I turned my face to the soft touch of it. The air smelled of green growing things. It smelled clean and new. I stood on the grass looking upward. Ellie Quinlan's window shone like a soft yellow beacon. Ellie had opened the windows, but her father had turned on the lights. She had met her vampire lover in darkness. The better not to see him for the walking corpse he was. I had the coverall back on, unzipped halfway so I could get to the Browning. I'd only brought an inner pants holster for the Firestar, so I shoved it into a pocket of the coveralls. Not handy for a quick draw, but better than not having it. An inner pants holster just doesn't work well with a skirt on. Larry had his very own gun in a shoulder rig. He stood beside me, shrugging his shoulders, trying to get the straps more comfortable. It isn't really uncomfortable if it's a good fit, but it isn't really comfortable either. It's sort of like a bra. They fit, and they are necessary, but they are never completely comfortable. He was wearing the extra coverall unzipped, and flapping nearly to his hips. A flashlight flickered over us, glinting on Larry's cross. The light swept over me, glaring in my eyes. "Now that you've ruined my night vision, get that damn thing out of my eyes." Deep masculine laughter came from behind the brilliant beam of light. Two state cops had arrived just in time to join us on the hunt. Oh, joy.
"Wallace," a man's voice said. "Do what the lady says."
The voice was deep and vaguely threatening. A voice to say, "Lean on the hood of the car and spread 'em. And you'd do it or else." Officer Granger walked up to us, his flashlight pointed at the ground. He wasn't as tall as Wallace, and a gut was beginning to creep over his belt, but he moved through the dark like he knew what he was doing. Like maybe he'd hunted in the dark before. Maybe not vampires, but something. Maybe men. Wallace walked over to us, flashlight swimming around us like an oversized firefly. It wasn't in my eyes, but it was still not helping my night vision. "Turn off the flashlight, please," I said. Wallace took a step closer, looming over me. He was tall, built like a football player with long legs. A running back, maybe. He and Deputy Coltrane could arm wrestle later. Right now, I just wanted him to back the fuck off me.
"Turn it off, Wallace," Granger said.
He'd already clicked off his own.
"I won't be able to see a damn thing," he protested.
"Afraid of the dark?" I asked, smiling up at him. Larry laughed. It was the wrong thing to do. Wallace turned on him.
"You think that's funny?"
He stepped up to Larry until they were almost touching, using his size to intimidate. But Larry's like me. He's been small all his life. He'd been bullied by the best. He stood his ground.
"Are you?" Larry asked.
"Am I what?" Wallace asked.
"Afraid of the dark."
Animating wasn't the only thing Larry was learning from me. Unfortunately for Larry, he was a boy. I could get away with being a pain in the ass and most people wouldn't take a swing at me. Larry wasn't so lucky. Wallace balled his hands into Larry's coverall and lifted him to tiptoes. His flashlight fell to the grass, rolling around, spotlighting our ankles. Officer Granger stepped up close to them but didn't touch Wallace. Even in the dark, you could see the tension in his shoulders and arms. Not from lifting Larry, but from wanting to hit him and resisting the urge.
"Ease down, Wallace. He didn't mean anything."
Wallace didn't say anything. He just pulled Larry closer to him, leaning over to put his face next to Larry's. A square of yellow light fell across his face. The muscle along the edge of his jaw was jutting out, throbbing like it would pop out of his face. There was a scar under the bone of his jawline, a scar that disappeared into the collar of his jacket. Wallace nearly put his face nose to nose with Larry.
"I am not afraid of anything."
Each word was squeezed out. I stepped up close to him. He was bent down to intimidate Larry, so I could whisper in his ear.
"Nice scar, Wallace."
He jumped like I'd bit him. He released Larry so suddenly that Larry stumbled. He whirled, one big hand raised to smash my face. At least he'd let go of Larry. He swung at me. I swept his arm to one side and past me. He stumbled.
I brought my knee up into his stomach hard. It took a lot not to follow through and really hurt him. He was a cop. One of the good guys. You don't beat up on them. I stepped back out of reach and hoped that one near miss had cooled him down. I could have hurt him badly in the initial rush, but now he'd be ready. Harder to hurt. He was nearly a foot taller than me and outweighed me by more than 100 pounds. If the fight turned serious, I was in trouble. I hoped I wouldn't regret my gallant gesture. Wallace ended on all fours near the shrubs by the house. He got to his feet quicker than I wanted him to, but he stayed half-bent over, hands on his knees. He looked up at me. I wasn't sure what his expression meant, but it wasn't completely hostile. It was more a considering sort of look, as if I'd surprised him. I get that look a lot. "You all right now, Wallace?" Granger asked. Wallace nodded. Hard to talk after a good gut shot. Granger glanced at me. "You all right, Miss Blake?" "I'm fine." He nodded. "Yes, you are." Larry moved up beside me. He was standing too close. If Wallace came back at me, I would need more room to maneuver. I knew that Larry meant it as a show of support. After we got Larry's shooting up to speed, we'd have to work on some basic hand-to-hand techniques. Why was I training him to shoot before I taught him to fight? Because you don't arm-wrestle vampires. You shoot them. He would live through a beating from Officer Wallace. He wouldn't live through a vampire attack. Not if he couldn't shoot. "Were you with him when he got that scar?" I asked. Granger shook his head. "His first partner didn't make it." "Vampire got him?" He nodded. Wallace stood up sort of slow. He arched his back just a bit as if working the kinks out. "Nice shot," he said. I shrugged. It was my knee, not my fist. "Still, a good shot. I don't have any excuses good enough for what I just did."
"No," I said.
"You don't." He just looked down at the ground, then up.
"I don't know what made me do it."
"Let's take a little walk." I started off into the dark without looking back, as if I had no doubt he'd follow me. This technique works more often than you think it would. He followed me. He had to stop to pick up his flashlight, but bravely turned it off. I stopped just short of the woods and stared off into the trees, letting my eyes adjust to the dark. I didn't look at anything in particular. I let my eyes just sort of see everything. I was looking for movement. Any movement. The tree limbs moved fitfully in the spring wind, but it was a general movement like ocean waves. The trees weren't what worried me. Wallace tapped the darkened flashlight against his thigh. A soft whap, whap. I wanted to tell him to stop, but didn't. If it comforted him, I could live with it. I let the silence stretch between us. The wind picked up, filling the night with a rushing, hurrying sound. You could smell the rain on the wind. He gripped the flashlight in both hands. I could hear his intake of breath above the wind.
"What was that?"
"The wind," I said.
"Are you sure?"
"Pretty much."
"What do you want?"
he asked. "Is this the first vamp you've gone after since your partner's death?" He looked at me.
"Granger told you?"
"Yeah, but I saw your neck. I was pretty sure what had done it." I wanted to tell him it was okay to be scared. Hell, I was scared, but he was a cop and a man, and I didn't know him well enough to know how he'd take a pep talk from me. But I had to know if he'd follow me into those woods. I had to know if I could depend on him. If he stayed this scared, I couldn't. "What happened?" I asked. Maybe talking about it right now was the wrong thing to do, but ignoring it wasn't working very well. He shook his head.
"Headquarters says you're in charge, Miss Blake. Fine. I'll do what I'm told, but I don't have to answer personal questions."
It was too much trouble to shrug out of the overall, and I really didn't want my arms trapped. I undid one button on my blouse and spread the cloth.
"What are you doing?"
"How good's your night vision?"
"Why?"
"Can you see the scar?"
"What are you talking about?"
He sounded suspicious. Suspicious that I was crazy, maybe. My night vision would have picked it up, but most people don't have my eyes. "Give me your hand."
"Why?"
"I am about to give you a once-in-a-lifetime offer. Just give me your damn hand."
He did, sort of hesitatingly, glancing back at the waiting men. His hand was cold to the touch. He was one scared puppy. I traced his large, blunt fingers along my collarbone. The moment he touched the scar tissue, his hand jerked like he'd had an electric shock. I pulled my hand away, and he traced the scar again on his own. He took his hand back, slowly, rubbing his fingers together like he was remembering the feel of my skin.
What did that?
Same thing that did your neck. A vampire that wasn't neat with its food.
Jesus,
he said.
Yeah,
I said. I rebuttoned my blouse. Tell me what happened, Wallace. Please. He looked at me for a moment longer, then nodded.
Harry, my partner, and me, we got a call that someone had found a body with its throat torn out.
He made the words very bland, ordinary, but I knew he was seeing it in his head, watching it all happen again behind his eyeballs.
It was a construction site, just us in the middle of the place with our flashlights. There was a sound like wind whistling, and something hit Harry. He went down with a man on top of him. He screamed, and I had my gun out. I fired into the man's back. I hit him solid 3-4 times. He turned on me and his face was bloody. I didn't have time to wonder why, 'cause he jumped me. I emptied my gun into him before I hit the ground.
He took a deep breath, big hands twisting back and forth on the flashlight. He was looking off into the trees, too, but not for vampires, or at least not for this one. He ripped my jacket and shirt like they were paper. I tried to fight him, but... He shook his head.
He caught me with his eyes. He caught me with his eyes, and when he tore into my neck, I wanted him to do it. Wanted it worse than I've ever wanted anything in my life.
He turned a little away from me, as if not meeting my eyes wasn't enough.
When I woke up, he was just gone. Harry was dead. The girl was dead. I was alive.
He turned to me finally, looked me straight in the eyes, and said,
"Why didn't he kill me, Miss Blake?"
I looked into his earnest eyes and didn't have a good answer. "I don't know, Wallace. He wanted to make you one of them, maybe. I don't know why you and not Harry. You ever catch him?"
The local master sent his head in a box to the station. The note apologized for his uncivilized behavior. That's what the note said. Uncivilized behavior.
It's hard to look at it as murder when you feed off humans yourself.
Do they all do that? Feed off people?
I've never met one that didn't.
Can't they eat animals?
Theoretically, yes. In practice, it seems to lack certain nutrients. Truth was, feeding was too close to sex for most vamps. They weren't into bestiality, so they didn't feed off animals. I didn't think the sex analogy would go over well with Officer Wallace.
Can you do this, Wallace?
What do you mean? Can you go out into the dark and hunt vampires?
It's my job.
I didn't ask if it was your job. I asked if you can go out into that darkness and hunt vampires.
You think there's more than one?
Always best to assume so, I said. He nodded.
Yeah, I guess so.
Scared? I asked.
Are you?
I looked off into the wind-swept night. The trees tossed and moaned in the wind. There was movement everywhere. Soon there would be rain, and what light the stars gave would be gone.
Yeah,
I'm scared.
But you're a vampire hunter, he said. How can you do this night after night if it scares you?
Doesn't it scare you to know that every time you pull over some yahoo for a traffic violation that he could be armed? You walk up on that car and never know.
It's my job.
And this is my job.
But you're scared?
Down to my toes.
Larry called. The sheriff's back. He's got the warrant.
Wallace and I looked at each other.
You got silver bullets? I asked. Yes.
I smiled.
Then let's go. You'll be fine, I said.
I believed it. Wallace would do his job. I would do my job. We would all do our jobs. And come morning, some of us would be alive and some of us wouldn't. Of course, maybe there was just the one newly dead vampire to deal with. If so, we might all see the sunrise.
But I hadn't lived this long assuming the best. Assuming the worst was always safer. And usually, truer.
Chapter 15. I'd gotten used to the sawed-off shotgun that I had at home. Yeah, it is illegal, but it's easy to carry and makes mincemeat out of vampires. What more could a modern vampire hunter want? The Ithaca pump-action 12-gauge was close. Why don't I get a shotgun? Larry asked. I just looked at him. He looked serious. I shook my head. When you can handle the 9, we'll talk about shotguns.
Great.
Oh, for the enthusiasm of youth. Larry was only 4 years younger than I was. Sometimes it seemed like a million. He's not going to shoot us in the back by accident, is he? Deputy Coltrane asked. I smiled, not sweetly. He promised not to. Coltrane looked at me like he wasn't sure I was kidding. Sheriff St. John joined us at the edge of the woods. He had a shotgun, too. I had to trust that he knew how to use it. Wallace had the shotgun from their unit. His partner, Granger, had a wicked-looking rifle like something a sniper would carry. It looked like the wrong tool for tonight's job, and I had said so. Granger had just looked at me. I'd shrugged and let it go. It was his neck and his gun. I looked around at them. They looked at me, waiting for me to give the word. "Everybody got their holy water?" I asked. Larry patted his coverall pocket. Everyone else nodded or mumbled yes. "Remember the 3 rules of vampire hunting. 1, never, ever look them in the eyes. 2, never, ever give up your cross. 3, aim for the head and heart. Even with silver ammo, it won't be a killing blow anywhere else." I felt like a kindergarten teacher sending her kiddies off to a hostile playground. "Don't panic if you get bitten. The bite can be cleansed. As long as they don't mesmerize you with their eyes, you can still fight." I looked at them, all silent, all taller than me, even Larry by an inch or two. They could all arm wrestle me and win. So why did I want to order them all into the house where they'd be safe? Heck, we could all go inside. Have a nice cup of hot cocoa, tell the Quinlans their little girl would be fine. I mean, liquid diets are in with teens. Right? I took a deep breath and let it out slow. "Let's do it, boys. We're wasting starlight." Either nobody got my John Wayne reference, or nobody thought it was funny. Hard to tell which. I had to let St. John lead the way into the black trees. I didn't know the area. He did. But I didn't like him taking point. I didn't like it at all. I wanted to bring him back to his wife. His high school sweetheart. 5 years married and still in love. Jesus. I didn't want to get him killed. The trees closed around us. St. John threaded his way through them like he knew what he was doing. There was very little undergrowth this time of year. It made it easier, but there was still an art to going through thick woods, especially in the dark. You can't really see, even with a flashlight. You have to sort of give yourself over to the trees the way you give yourself to water when you swim. You don't really concentrate on the water or even on your own body. You concentrate on the rhythm of your body cutting, sliding through the cool liquid. For the forest, you find a rhythm, too. You concentrate on sliding your body through the natural openings, finding the place where the forest itself will let you through. If you fight it, it will fight you back. And just like water, it can kill you. Anyone who doesn't believe that the forest is a deadly place has never been lost in one. St. John knew how to move, and so did I. I was pretty pleased at that, actually. I'd been a city girl for a long time. Larry stumbled into me. I had to brace or we'd have both gone down. "Sorry," he said, pushing himself away from me. "How you doing up there, vampire hunter?" Coltrane called. He was bringing up the rear. I had to go second to back up St. John, and I wouldn't let Larry take rear. Coltrane had wanted it. Said he and the sheriff would guard our ass. Fine with me.
"Yell a little louder," Wallace said. "I don't think the vampire heard you."
"I don't need no statey telling me how to do my job."
"It knows we're here," I said.
That stopped them. They both looked at me. Granger, who was just ahead of Wallace, looked at me too. I had everyone's attention. Even if the vampire is only a few weeks old, its hearing is incredibly acute. It knows we're here. It knows we're coming. It doesn't matter if we're quiet or have a brass band, it's all the same. We won't surprise it in the dark. It would probably surprise us, but I didn't add that part aloud. We were all thinking it anyway.
We are wasting time here, Deputy, St. John said.
Coltrane didn't apologize or even look sorry. Wallace did.
I'm sorry, Sheriff. It won't happen again.
St. John nodded and turned without another word and led us farther into the woods. Coltrane made a small humphing sound but let it go. Whatever he said, I didn't think Wallace would rise to bait again. At least I hope not. I didn't care if he was scared. We had enough problems without fighting among ourselves. The trees rustled and swayed around us. Last year's dead leaves crunched underfoot. Someone cursed softly behind me. The wind blew in a wild gust, streaming my hair back from my face. Up ahead, the quality of darkness was different. We were approaching the clearing. St. John stopped just short of the tree line. He glanced back at me.
How do you want to do this?
I could taste the rain on the wind coming closer. If possible, I wanted us out of here before it came. Visibility sucked as it was. We kill it and we get the hell back to the house. It's not a hard plan. He nodded as if I'd said something profound. Wish I had. A figure stepped out in front of us. 1 minute nothing, the next, there he was. Darkness and shadows. Magic. He grabbed St. John as he went for his gun and threw him out into the clearing in a high, looping arch. I shot the vampire in the chest at almost point-blank range. He collapsed to his knees. I caught a glimpse of the whites of his eyes, like he couldn't believe it. I had to pump the shotgun to jack another shell in place. Granger's rifle exploded behind me like a cannon. Someone screamed. I shot the vampire between the eyes. His head splattered into the leaves. I turned with the shotgun to my shoulder before the body hit the ground. Larry was on the ground with a vamp on top of him. I had a glimpse of long brown hair before his cross flared to life in a brilliant flash of blue-white fire. She flung herself backwards with a scream, scrambling into the dark. Gone. A vamp with long blonde hair held Granger in her slender arms, head pressed to his neck. I couldn't use the shotgun. They were pressed too close together. At this range, I'd kill them both. I dropped the shotgun into Larry's surprised lap. He was still lying on the ground, blinking. I drew the Browning and fired into the vampire's broad chest. She jerked, but didn't let go of Granger. The vampire looked at me, the man still clasped to her chest. She hissed at me. I fired a round into her gaping mouth. It blew the back of her head out. The vamp shuddered. I fired a second round into her head. She let go of Granger and fell to the leaves in convulsions. Granger just lay there. In the dark, I couldn't see his face or neck. Dead or alive, I'd done all I could. Larry was on his feet, shotgun awkward in his hands. There was a scream, low and pain-filled. Wallace was on the ground with a slender-bodied vamp on top of him. Fangs sunk in his arm. The bone broke with a loud, brittle snap. He screamed again. I had a glimpse of Coltrane standing frozen just beyond. There was movement behind him. I stared straight at it, waiting for the vampire to take shape from the shadows, but something gleamed. A dull silver blade flashed into sight. I stared straight at it, but I lost a second somehow. The next thing I knew, the blade tip exploded from Coltrane's throat. I lost another second, blinking at shadows, and the vampire tore the blade from his throat and was gone. It scuttled through the trees like nothing human, unbelievably fast, like a nightmare seen from the corner of your eye. Larry raised the shotgun to his shoulder, aimed in Wallace's direction. I grabbed it from him, and something smashed into my back and rode me into the leaves. A hand pressed my face into the dry, crackling leaves. A second hand ripped the back of my coverall so violently it wrenched one shoulder. There was an explosion just behind my head, and the vampire was gone. I rolled over, ears ringing. Larry was standing over me with his arm extended, gun out. Whatever he'd shot was gone out in the dark. My left shoulder was hurt, but not as badly as it might be if I didn't get up. I struggled to my feet. The vampires were gone. Wallace was sitting up, cradling his arm.
Coltrane lay on the ground without moving. A sound behind us. I turned, Browning pointed. Larry was turning too, but too slow. I sighted down the barrel, and it was St. John.
Don't shoot. It's me.
Larry held his gun two-handed, pointed at the ground.
Sweet Jesus, he said.
Amen.
What happened to you?
The fall knocked me out. I followed the sound of shots, St. John said. A gust of wind slapped against us. It smelled so strongly of rain I almost felt it on my skin.
Check Granger's pulse, Larry, I said.
What?
Larry looked shell-shocked.
See if he's alive. It was a messy job, and I'd have done it myself, but I trusted me more than Larry to keep the vampires away. He'd saved me once tonight, but I still trusted me more.
St. John walked past us. He touched Wallace, who nodded.
My arm's broke, but I'll live.
St. John went to Coltrane's still form. Larry knelt by Granger. He switched his gun to his left hand. Not the best thing to do, but I understood. Hard to check for a pulse in the dark on a throat warm with blood. Better to use your dominant hand.
I've got a pulse.
He looked up, his broad smile a dim whiteness in the dark.
Coltrane's dead, St. John said. God help me. He's dead.
He raised a hand and the skin glistened with blood, black in the dim light.
He's nearly decapitated. What did this?
Sword, I said. I'd seen it. Watched it happen. But all I could remember was a black shape larger than a human being, or larger than most. A shadow with a sword was all I'd seen, and I'd been looking right at it. Something flowed across my skin, and it wasn't the wind. Power filled the spring night like water. There's something old out here, I said.
What are you talking about?
St. John said.
An ancient vampire. It's here. I can feel it.
I searched the darkness, but nothing moved but the trees, the wind. There was nothing to see, nothing to fight. But it was here, and it was close. Sword in hand, maybe. Granger sat up so suddenly that Larry fell back into the leaves with a squeak. The big man's eyes turned to me. I saw his hand go for his gun, and I knew what the vampire was doing. I pointed the Browning at his head and waited. I had to be sure. Granger didn't hunt for his dropped rifle. He drew his sidearm and pointed it very slowly as if he didn't want to do it. He pointed it at Larry from less than a foot away.
Wallace yelled, "Granger, what the fuck are you doing?"
I fired. Granger jerked. The gun wavered, then his hand came back up. I fired again and again. His hand fell slowly to the ground, gun still in it. He fell straight back into the leaves.
"Granger!"
Wallace was screaming, crawling toward his partner.
Shit.
I got there first and kicked the gun out of his hand. If he'd twitched, I'd have shot him again. He didn't twitch. He just lay there, dead. Wallace tried to cradle him one-handed.
Why'd you shoot him? Why?
He was going to kill Larry. You saw it.
Why?
The vamp that bit him, his master, is out here, and he's a powerful son of a bitch. He used him. Wallace had Granger's bloody head in his lap, his own ravaged arm pressed to Granger's chest. He was crying.
Shit.
A sound rode the rising wind. A sharp, furious barking. A woman's scream, high and clear, cut across the sound.
Oh, God, I whispered. Beth!
St. John was on his feet, running before I could say anything. I grabbed Wallace's shoulder, pulling on his jacket. He looked up.
What's happening?
They're in the house, I said.
Can you walk?
He nodded. I helped him to his feet. Another scream came. It wasn't the same scream, a man this time, or a boy.
Stay with him, Larry. Get to the house as soon as you can.
What if they're trying to split us up? Larry asked.
Then it's going to work, I said. Shoot anything that moves.
I touched his arm as if that would make him more real, keep him safe. It wouldn't, but it was all I had. I had to go for the house. Larry had signed up to be a monster slayer. The Quinlans and Beth St. John hadn't. I holstered the Browning.
kept a two-hand grip on the shotgun, and threw myself into the trees. I ran,